Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
206 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show. Boy, oh boy, so much to talk about this hour. John McCain going after President Trump. What else is new? But this time it's going to be a big old book. So that story, as well as how did the Obama administration and their lax discipline policies lead to the horrors of the shooting in Parkland, Florida. That story as well. And by the way, school violence all across America. It is a story that I've been following for you, and we'll also continue that storyline coming up here on WTN. But I want to welcome on in Kathy Hinders. Kathy, always glad to have you on. Of course, 20 years as a police officer in the state of New York. And of course, now you're somebody who watches the world of radical Islamic terrorism for us as well. But this story is one that I've been talking about for the last couple of days. It's the shooting of Stephon Clark, 22 years old. Now, I posted the video on the Dan Mandis Show Facebook page. It's the same kind of storyline that we always hear, as Sacramento police shooting an unarmed black man in his own backyard. Now, we all know there's Black Lives Matter that's involved. His grandmother is asking why, and she wants the police officers in question to be brought up on some sort of a charge. And so you can see the video from another couple of different locations and standpoints on the Facebook page. But I'm going to set the scene for folks, and then, Kathy, I'm going to ask you if this was a justified shooting. So you've got some vandalism that's happening in the area there in Sacramento. And so police are chasing and looking for whoever was breaking windows and vandalizing, you know, cars and so forth. And Stephon Clark is seen from a helicopter running through backyards and hopping fences and so forth. He eventually gets to his grandparents' home, where there is an altercation in the backyard. And so you've got Stephon Clark, and he is down, you know, a little bit down in the backyard, and the police are yelling at him to stop. He doesn't stop. He's continuing to walk towards the police. The police yell, "Gun, gun," and then they shoot this guy some 20 times, or at least there were 20 shots fired. And so he ends up dead, clearly, obviously. And so there's a lot of questions that people are asking about this particular shooting. Now, after 20 years on the force in New York, Kathy, you have seen the video. You tell me, was this a justified shooting?
Absolutely, it was. And you and I have talked about several shootings in the past, and, you know, sometimes I disagree with how they do these things. But in this anti-police climate that we are today, where officers are repeatedly ambushed. So far this year, we've lost 24 cops. If they perceive this as a threat, then the goal is to stop the threat.
Yeah.
And I guess what I don't understand is, you know, it's completely dark and he continues to advance. If he would just would have communicated something with the police, like, you know, "I'm going to get on the ground, here's my hands," whatever, but without saying anything and continuing to advance, of course they're going to neutralize the threat. So,
well,
yeah, I think this was totally justified.
That was the thing, and if you watch the video, this guy Clark, the police, clearly there is an altercation. Clearly this guy knows that the police, they have guns. And so instead of getting down on the ground, instead of putting his hands up, he walks towards the police. And so as the story goes, I would assume the police thought that his cell phone was a gun. And so they ended up firing on this guy many times. Now, one of the questions that I would have, Kathy, is, as I've looked at this video a number of different times, is the guy is down on the ground and the firing continues, the shooting continues. Is there an argument to be made that the firing of the guns, the shooting at Stephon Clark, he's on the ground. Was the shooting too much?
No, I still don't think until you know that the threat is eliminated. I mean, he certainly could have taken a position on the ground, which would have given him an advantage, actually, and you know, possibly shoot at the police. So, no, I think unfortunately, you know, he passed because he didn't follow orders or he didn't stop immediately. And it doesn't take rocket science these days to know, you know, when you engage with the police, you're better off immediately dropping to the ground, putting your hands where they can see them, hands free with nothing in them, obviously.
Right.
So, you know, another unfortunate scenario.
It is an unfortunate scenario, and I think that the police, they tend to be in no-win situations in these kinds of stories. Now, the other question I would have is, and this was the update to the story, and it's something that I wanted to ask you about, is we all had the conversations regarding body cams and for police officers and uniform cams for police officers. And so the uniform cams were on these Sacramento cops, although shortly after the shooting, as the story goes, moments, quote unquote, after the shooting, the police officers decided to mute the audio on the cameras so that their conversations would not be picked up. Why would they do that? Do you have any idea?
Well, I think knowing, you know, when you shoot somebody, obviously, or you believe you've shot somebody, there's a lot of adrenaline. There's a lot of things being said. It isn't always about a conspiracy between the police officers. So, you know, I think that's probably why they muted it at that point. But, you know, they didn't break policy because according to their policy, it says that they should record any enforcement or investigative activity until the operation has reasonably concluded. And at that time, they felt that it had reasonably concluded. Now, people obviously have this bad feeling that they were trying to hide something. I don't believe that's necessarily the case. I think, you know, enough is enough. They've got the footage. They released immediately from their cameras and from the helicopter cameras. Yeah. So I think they're pretty telling.
Yeah, and I think you and I spoke about in the days after the Ferguson riots and Michael Brown and all this other kind of stuff, you and I talked about how I'm all for, just so people know, it's been a long time since I've spoken about this, I'm all for police cameras on on police officers and uniforms and all that. And the reason why is because I think that there's many times when the police are in the right, but they are accused of wrongdoing. And so I think that for transparency on everybody's side, that the police cameras are a good thing. So in this particular instance, the problem the police have, I think, is that the optics are bad in the sense that you see this guy, he is unarmed. And so the police fire and he's gunned down and they fire 20 times. I don't know how many bullets actually ended up hitting the target. But it does look bad for the police unless you are somebody who has a rational mind and can think about these things from the standpoint of a police officer. And you just pointed out, they told him to stop advancing. He didn't do anything. He didn't follow orders. The police very well should have, and they did. They told him to stop. He didn't stop. Instead, he just kept advancing. And so he ended up getting shot. In this particular case, even though you and I, Kathy, because we have rational thought and some of these protesters and some of these folks from the NAACP and so forth, they don't have rational thought. They're trying to agendize everything. So my question would be, in this particular case, do you think the video is going to do more harm than good for the police?
It could. You know, unfortunately, their body cam shows a completely different scenario than the helicopter, you know, which picked up the thermal image of him and advancing. So while theirs may kind of be hurtful because it's pitch black, you really can't see anything, so we don't really know. But I think the helicopter, the overhead, may help him. And the thing that I find most ironic and actually very hypocritical is with all that's happening with the Parkland, you know, shooting down in Florida, this time you're not hearing an outcry about the gun at all. They're directing it, you know, about the shooters, which was just the opposite in Florida. So, you know, here we are with the hypocritical, ironic things. And once again, Black Lives Matter is making it a racial issue, which, you know, they may not even have known that he was a Black American, African American.
Right. Yeah. So. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah. All right. Well, Kathy, always appreciate your analysis and you have a great afternoon. And it's, you know, it's just one of those stories. It's 2:15 on WTN. It's just one of those stories that we hear over and over and over again about white officers and black suspects, and they're shot and killed, and the guy didn't not have a gun. He had a cell phone. But it's all about what the police officers are dealing with and what their thoughts are as to the intentions of the person that they are pursuing. And if the police officers feel like it is the intention of the person who they are chasing after to fire a gun at them, then they're going to do what they have to do if they feel like their lives are at stake. And so in this case, if this guy Clark, if he is advancing towards the police officers, he's not listening to their commands, and then the police officers think that the guy has a gun, they have no choice but to shoot. And one of the things that the grim. I meant to ask Kathy about this, but I can answer it for Kathy because I've spoken to Kathy many times about this stuff. One of the things that the grandmother said, because she wants the police officers brought up on some sort of a charge, is why couldn't they have shot the guy in the arm? Why couldn't the police officers have tased this guy? Well, I will answer about the shooting of the police officers and shooting the guy in the arm, the suspect in the arm. Well, they have to shoot assuming the guy has a gun. So if you're gonna force to shoot a suspect, well then, I hate to say it, but you have to shoot to disable or kill the suspect. And that's just the way it goes, because if you just shoot the guy in the arm and he has a gun, then he has the ability to fire back at the police officers or kill somebody who is an innocent bystander. So it's just part of what the police have to go through on a daily basis. And it's sad, but we see these things and we see these things all the time. But the ultimate question is, were the police justified in the shooting? And if you look at the video, and you can see it on the Facebook page, to me, it is. Here's the headline: John McCain releasing a no-holds-barred verdict on President Trump. Now, we all know, speaking of transparency, for whatever reason this word keeps coming up today, we all know that John McCain absolutely hates President Trump. Well, now he is coming out with a book, and it's going to be all about President Trump. They are saying it's a no-holds-barred verdict on Trump's presidency. Now, as far as this story goes, I would say, well, it's McCain's verdict on the Trump presidency. Now, we all know that John McCain has been somebody who has been a never-Trumper since the very beginning. We know, and the Yahoo points out, McCain has been one of Trump's most forceful critics over the last 2 years, both in the run-up to the 2016 election and in the aftermath. Now, one of the things that they're saying about this book is that John McCain has always been, quote, candid, pragmatic, and always fascinating. So, and they're saying this is his latest memoir, and apparently McCain writes books every now and again, whatever. But, you know, when you think about John McCain and you think about what he has done, I'm not going to say for the Republican Party, I'm going to say to the Republican Party. This is a guy who will vote with Chuck Schumer and the liberals, it seems like, more often than not. This is a guy who a lot of Republicans clearly do not like, including President Trump. And so for anybody to think that McCain is going to come out with some sort of a book on President Trump that is going to be fair-minded, not in any way, shape, or form. John McCain, just like Jeff Flake, they've been never Trumpers since the very beginning. And McCain doesn't like the fact that the Republican Party and conservatism has changed over the years. But this is something that McCain wants to do. I personally think that he has never really gotten over the fact that he lost to Barack Obama way back in. And I think that McCain is probably a little bit jealous of President Trump. And McCain is somebody who is not used to being criticized. And we know that the president has been critical of John McCain. And McCain, for his part, he doesn't like being criticized. Now, nobody likes to be criticized, but we know that McCain, for all of his political career, it's always been sort of hands off as far as being able to criticize this guy because of the fact that he was a prisoner of war for so many years. And so for anybody to dare to criticize John McCain, you're going to get the wrath of some conservatives because he was a prisoner of war. But guess what? McCain can dish it out, and so he's going to have to take it as well. And so the president more than likely will have something to say, perhaps, about John McCain and this book. And so you know that McCain's going to be all over the place once this book actually comes out, because he's going to be a Republican criticizing President Trump. That is, if he has not succumbed to his cancer. It is 2:21 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
Coming up, more information on the proposed bill that would make changes to the Major League Soccer stadium proposed at the Nashville Fairgrounds. It's coming up at 2:30 on WTN.
2:26 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show. Jim sent me this email. You can as well, Dan at 99.7WTN.com. He says, I was under the impression from media reports that John McCain has an aggressive form of brain cancer. How has he been able to complete such an accomplishment as a book and possible book tour with such a diagnosis? Well, Jim, it's a very good point. I'm assuming that good old John McCain, he's got somebody writing his books for him. And a lot of these folks do this, but For me, it's not really that surprising. The context of the book is all about President Trump and how much of an idiot the president is. And he's really going to come after President Trump. But I'm assuming it's going to be out. And in fact, I didn't see when this book is supposed to come out. But apparently, I'm sure it's going to be out just in time for the midterm elections. Hundreds are protesting a college's proposal to drop humanities for more practical majors. Now, we've all had conversations about the horrific shape the colleges are in across America. And now this is out of the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. And apparently now hundreds of students are protesting the fact that this particular college wants to drop humanities. We're talking about majors like social studies, the humanities, because the problem is that you have a lot of these various majors and you don't have enough students that are going to the college to take these particular majors. We're talking about American studies, art, English, French, geography, geoscience, German history, music, literature, philosophy, political science, sociology, and Spanish. Those are some, if not all, of the 13 programs, the majors, that are going to be eliminated because the folks at the college say, listen, not enough students are taking these majors, and so there's no reason for us to keep offering them. It's just a waste of money. Now, what they're doing to replace those majors, they're going to add or expand 16 programs that have a, quote, higher demand to deal with declining enrollment and reduced tuition revenue. Those more pragmatic majors include marketing, management, computer information systems, graphic design, and aquaculture. Aquaculture, what is that? I should have looked this up before I got on the air.
Something to do with water.
Thank you. Water culture. What? Yeah, I bet. You know what? Let's look that up. Let's see if we can figure out what aquaculture is. Anyway, they say that these are areas that have demonstrated value and demand in the region. And so now you got all these. You know, can you imagine all these students that are really upset because the university is dropping these particular programs? And that tells you that a lot of these students, they just don't understand the fact that colleges are out to make money. It's all about a demand. It's all about the free market. But they, of course, don't understand that because that's not necessarily something that a lot of the younger generation appreciates these days. It's just all about me, 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 me.
It's a botanical term. It means the rearing of aquatic animals or the cultivation of aquatic plants or food.
Yeah, so you'd probably work at a zoo or you'd work at a...
Oh, all right. It's interesting, though, that's one of the big up-and-coming majors in colleges, but this was in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, with global warming, there's going to be a lot more ocean, so you have more places to plant.
With all the icebergs that are melting, sure,
yeah.
That's a great point. Anyway, all right, so coming up now, finally going to get to this dang story, how President Obama and his, let's just say, lax disciplinary policies are making schools more dangerous. That story and a whole lot more straight ahead on WTN. 2:37 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandis Show. Hello, hello. Phil Valentine coming up after the news.
Hello.
Hello. At 3:06, very quickly, because I, for the love of Pete, have got to get to this this story about former President Obama. Have you seen the video, Pamela, of that 7-foot alligator?
Yes.
Is it just me,
which
or does
nothing
that
to do with Obama, right?
No.
Okay.
Is it just me, or does that video, and let's post it on the WTN Facebook page, it looks like the old Sasquatch Bigfoot video. It's really grainy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I saw it. It reminds me of the old Sasquatch video. So if you want to check it out, you can on the WTN Facebook page. By the way, looking forward to seeing folks tonight and really looking forward to this. One final reminder that Pamela, myself, Michael, Phil, Brian Wilson, Doogie's going to be there. Bell's going to be there. A lot of Johnny B, I believe, is going to be there as well. Tonight at Wings and Rings in Cool Springs. That is going to be tonight from 6 to 8.
The only one who's not going to be there is Ken Weaver.
You know what? Ken...
he is antisocial.
It's not that
Chris Weber's not going either because he's antisocial.
Well, Chris has to get up... Well, they, you know, they have to get up very
so
early in the morning.
So does
Brian.
There is that, yes, but...
Yeah, you got nothing.
No, it's not that I got nothing. It's just that I don't want to say what I would say, which is that, you know, Brian makes a lot more money than those two, so he's going to be there.
Which means nothing. No, it's Ken has kids.
Ken has kids, and
Chris
so does Chris.
Yeah. They have young children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but anyway,
Brian doesn't. None of the rest of us. I don't think any of us
have small kids.
Well, Michael does, and they're coming. Yeah. I think he's bringing his whole family.
Anyway, we'll have food, drinks, specials, conversation, and have a nice little Q&A as well. And basically, this is an opportunity for folks to come and meet all the people at WTN and kind of shake our hand, and we can shake your hand, and we can talk about stuff that we don't typically get to talk about all the time on the radio, because there's some topics that we don't always get to cover. So if there's something you want to run by us, you can. If you just want to say, hey, because I know, Pamela, you're the same way, I really enjoy meeting listeners. And so that is going to be tonight at Wings and Rings in Cool Springs. And
be sure to get your picture with Dan.
Yes, by all means, get your picture taken with Dan. And that is going. Now, are you going to do the thing you always do, Pamela? Whenever somebody wants to take a picture with you, is you get first right of refusal?
Yep.
Even a listener? Yep. Are you really going to be like
always
that?
Always a listener.
All right. Brought to you by our friends at Paul Winkler Incorporated. So, we all know about what happened this weekend with a big March for Our Lives.
When politicians send their thoughts and prayers with no action, we say no.
We say
no. And to those politicians supported by the NRA that allow the continued slaughter of our children and our future, I say get your resumes ready.
Yeah, so that is, of course, David Camera Hog is Phil Valentine. A whole bunch of other folks have been calling this guy now. Barack and Michelle Obama, this was about a week ago. They actually penned a letter to the Parkland survivors saying, "You've helped awaken the conscience of a nation." The former president and first lady offered their support to the survivors. "We wanted to let you know how inspired the Obamas wrote that we have been, by the resilience, the Obamas inspired by the resilience, the resolve and the solidarity that the students have all shown in the wake of unspeakable tragedy, saying not only have you supported and comforted each other, but you've helped awaken the conscience of the nation," blah, 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 blah. He says, "Throughout our history, many young people like you have led the way in making America better," Obama wrote. "There may be setbacks. You may feel like progress is too slow in coming, but we have no doubt you are going to make an enormous difference in the days and years to come, and we will be there for you." And it goes on and on. One of the other stories in the news today about these kids is that Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, actually flew these kids on his jet to Washington, D.C. Now, you don't think that these kids are just having a blast? You don't think that David Gonzalez and David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez, you don't think that they are just absolutely loving all of this attention from the likes of Barack Obama, Robert Kraft, George Clooney? I mean, it goes on and on and on.
Paul McCartney.
Oh, was Paul McCartney doing something too? I didn't know
He marched with him.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. He was in the crowd on behalf of his friend John Lennon.
Okay. You know what? That makes sense. Yep. Paul McCartney and his wanting to remember John Lennon. But you know what? Here's the thing. Okay. So what was what was behind the murder of John Lennon? Right.
Mental
health.
Yep.
So were they out there marching for? Don't get me started on this, but because it's something that we've been saying all along. The problem with Nicholas Cruz, the problem with the guy that shot John Lennon, whose name now escapes me, of course, David, I can't remember now. The guy who shot John Lennon. People are screaming at the radio right now, but I don't remember his name. But it's
Mark
all
David Chapman.
Mark David Chapman. It's all about mental health. That's the problem, though. And what have I been saying all along? I feel like a broken record at this point. But David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez and all these other folks, they're missing the bigger picture. And the bigger picture, of course, is that there are so many things that lead to these kinds of tragedies. And we know the FBI missed all those clues. We know about mental health issues. We also know about a lack of discipline in the schools. Oh, by the way, one very quickly, because that's where Obama comes in. We all know that during the first couple of years of the Obama administration, well, the Democrats had the House and the Senate and the White House. And what did they do about guns? As far as I know, absolutely nothing. Now, here's the story that the New York Post has followed up on. This is something that I've been talking about for a long time. The headline is Obama's lax discipline policies made schools dangerous. Now, what have I been telling you all along? That the situation in Parkland you have, and in schools all across America, but certainly in Parkland, you had Nicholas Cruz, this guy who had a ton of issues. Was the school able to discipline him appropriately? Well, no. As a matter of fact, what they did with Nicholas Cruz was they bounced him from school to school to school to school, but never really taking the discipline and the action that they really needed to take. Why? Well, it's what I've been telling you. It's all about President Obama and the fact that he was essentially forcing schools not to discipline kids who were minority, who were African-American, who were Hispanic. And the reason being is that there was this whole movement way back in, I think it was 2014, where then-President Obama said to the schools, listen, what's happening is you're sending far too many kids from school to prison. It was actually called the school-to-prison pipeline. And so Obama and his administration, they had this brilliant idea to just stop enforcing the rules. And so when you stop enforcing the rules, you're not going to have as many arrests. But ultimately, what you're then doing is you're giving these kids the ability and you're allowing them to perpetuate all kinds of violence in their schools, and they reach absolutely no consequences. They experience no consequences. And so now what they're seeing in schools across the country is an increase in the violence. This is the story out of the New York Post. Since President Obama pressured educators to adopt the new code of conduct, making it harder to suspend or expel students of color, even kids who punched out their teacher are not automatically kicked out of school. Now, previously, quote, if you hit a teacher, you're gone, said one instructor, Peter Kersenow, a black conservative on the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. He says that is no longer the case. He says thanks to, quote, race-based discipline quotas sweeping the nation's schools. So in other words, if a black kid hits a teacher, apparently they're not gone. Used to be they were, but no longer. It says in just the first year after Obama in January of 2014 issued new discipline guidelines, which came with threats of federal investigations and defunding, schools saw more than 160,000 physical attacks on teachers across the country. And yet the assailants were expelled in fewer than 130,000 cases. That's according to the latest data. So in other words, you hit a teacher, but if you're someone who is African-American, some sort of a minority, you don't suffer the consequences that you used to. As a result, guess what happens? The violence continues to rise. Many teachers have been sent to the hospital by students emboldened by the lax discipline rules, which remain in full force. Come on, Trump. Despite the change in administration, and now have been adopted by 53 of the nation's largest school districts, including New York City. The growing number of classroom horror stories and backlash from teachers' unions have left former Obama educrats scrambling to defend the lower discipline standards. They say that no one has ever advocated for policies that make students and teachers unsafe, says one Obama educrat. But the bottom line is, if you lower the discipline standards, if kids don't face any ramifications or consequences to their action, well, then you are emboldening these students to do it again, again, and again. Listen to this. This is from St. Paul, Minnesota, a former St. Paul, Minnesota science teacher who was, quote, beaten and choked out by a 16-year-old black student, blames the discipline policies, which he says are preferential towards African-American students. The high school student allegedly came up behind the instructor, called him a blankety-blank white cracker, and put him in a stranglehold before bashing his head into a concrete wall and pavement, causing him to suffer a concussion and brain damage. And he says that this is rising out of control, this violence. He says the district is not suspending students for fighting or theft or drugs, alcohol, none of this stuff. The kids are facing very little disciplinary action because of the Obama administration's threats saying that there's too many black kids going to prison. So let's just forget about the rules and let's forget about discipline. Let's forget about protecting the teachers and fellow students. Let's just let these kids run rampant in the hallways and start beating up students and other and teachers. In New York, because this is happening not only in Parkland, Florida, where we had, of course, what happened at the school there at the hands of Nicholas Cruz, but this is happening all across the country. A surge in violence in New York has followed Mayor Bill de Blasio's racially motivated anti-discipline push. He started his in early 2015, right after the Obama administration decided to level their threats against school districts nationwide. So while de Blasio touts a dramatic drop in New York City school suspensions, well, it's easy for the number of suspensions to drop if you decide you're just not going to enforce any rules. And that's the problem. So there's been a dramatic drop in the suspensions, but school assaults, including attacks on teachers, they have soared 48%. What does that tell you? What that tells you is that when the drop in school suspensions began, the violence against teachers and other students rose dramatically. In Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, same thing. A series of violent altercations with students led to a wave of teacher resignations just last month. Because it's almost like it's open season on teachers all across America. In Buffalo, New York, a teacher who got kicked in the head by a student said, quote, "We have fights here almost every single day. The kids walk around and say, we can't get suspended. We don't care what you say." Again, you are emboldening the violence. Now, you can blame the Obama administration all you want, but we are well into the Trump administration, and this is something that has got to change. In Charlotte, North Carolina, assaults on faculty have climbed 2 years in a row as schools implemented Obama's discipline reforms. Here's one quote. "There were staff that were afraid of students because the students are just running around and walking around the hallways emboldened. They're threatening teachers. They are beating up teachers. They're beating up other students, and they're allowed to do this with no ramifications and no discipline in the hallways." Now, last month, a group of teachers met with President Trump and the education officials within his administration to urge them to scrap the directive. But so far, no real indication that this is going to change. And so these kinds of things are going to continue to happen. So as David Hogg and Emma Gonzalez and all of these students participate in all of these walkouts, and while President Obama is writing these loving notes of devotion to all these students that are calling for more gun control and, you know, basically abolishing the Second Amendment, what I would ask those students is, okay, so what about the fact that your president, President Obama, he essentially put these policies in place where these troubled students, like Nicholas Cruz, they're not held accountable for their actions. And so they are ultimately emboldened to do what Nicholas Cruz ultimately did. Because I want you to think about this, and I know I've got to take a break very quickly. You got to think about it this way. If Nicholas Cruz had been expelled, if he had felt some sort of a ramification or a consequence, some sort of a punishment for his earlier actions, his life could have been altered and changed in many different ways. And those 17 lives could have been saved if the mind of Nicholas Cruz could have been saved. Because listen, you may think that it's such a loving thing to make sure that these young minority males are, you know, saved from going to prison. The truth of the matter is you're not doing them a favor by saving them from consequences, because it is a lack of consequences that embolden these students to ultimately do what they eventually do, which is beat up students and open fire on their classmates and teachers. And it goes on and on and on. But that is the lack of perspective that a lot of these students who are calling for an end to the Second Amendment, that's the perspective that these students are completely missing. 253 on WTN.
I'm Pamela Furr. hour coming up. Two Metro City Council members say there's a better place than the fairgrounds for the proposed soccer stadium. And Ambassador Nikki Haley tells Russia they should be ashamed. These stories and more coming up at 3 on WTN.
Shame on you, Vladimir Putin. Shame. It's 2:58 on Supertalk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandis Show. By the way, you can always find a link to podcasts of this radio program at 99.7WTN.com. Guys, send me a note. Dan, great analysis. Thank you. On this whole situation regarding...
You just wanted to stop right there, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It's just kind of funny. I was actually waiting for a but there was no but. He said, yeah, absolutely. He talked about how, it's a long email, so... But basically, he talked about how because his son... Faced no real consequences to the things that he did as a kid, it did embolden him to continue down a road of crime, a path of crime. And so he totally gets that a lot of these students need to face consequences for their actions. So we'll continue this conversation probably tomorrow on WTN.